Good afternoon, everybody. We are on program number 87 of the externalization of the hierarchy, and we're talking about the emergent ashrams, which they are, their time of emergence, and so forth. So we've been looking at five specialized energies and seven modes of expression, or seven targets of expression that the hierarchy will scientifically utilize. And not all of them are completely active yet, more like five of those seven. Now we're talking about the specific ashrams which will be emerging. And this is a 1949 letter, and written not long before Alice Bailey passed over. The ashram of Master KH is already assuming an increased stimulating potency, but it will nevertheless be one of the last to manifest objectively on the physical plane. The mission of that ashram is to produce the energy which will make possible and definite the reappearance of the Christ. So, since so much preparatory work has to be done in the various planetary centers, we can understand that an ashram that is particularly involved with the objective appearance of the Christ will be one of the last. That reappearance is the major preoccupation of Master KH and his group of initiates and disciples. The first step taken by the ashram was embodied, as far as all of you are concerned, in the pamphlet entitled The Reappearance of the Christ, the WASAC message of May 1947. And to this must be added the vitalization and stimulation of the 2,000-year-old thought form which men down the centuries have created in anticipation of his coming or advent. The movement toward expectancy and preparation is now rapidly gaining momentum. This was the first concrete result of the combined desire of this secondary ashram. However, the work being done in this ashram is more definitely concerned with three lines of activity. Okay, so let's use the indigo color here, associated with Master KH. Of course, maybe some subsidiary ashrams in his larger ray ashram may externalize sooner. I wonder about the Tibetan's ashram. Already some movement towards externalization did occur. And he is definitely under the guidance of Master KH. So maybe these two are considered separately. Anyway, the potency of stimulation which can be offered by Master KH's ashram is intensifying. And as it is said here, though there is much preparation, the definite reappearance of the Christ is in charge of this particular ashram, or at least the the preparatory, the immediate preparatory work. And it is a preoccupation, and his group of for Master K.H. and his group of disciples and initiates. And maybe some of us can number ourselves among those who are looking ahead and thinking in that preparatory mode. And so we see DK working in relation to that ashram, bringing forward the pamphlet, The Reappearance of the Christ, and of course the entire book made its appearance, a collection of essays, I think, and such a valuable guide to those who are working in this way, and also valuable for awakening the people to the true image of the Christ, to the true image of the hierarchy. Okay. So now, what is the work done in this ashram? Three lines of activity, particularly, work. Define the work done in this ashram. Number one, the preparation of the many combined ashrams leading to externalization. So I think we can see the unifying power of the work that goes on in relation to this great second ray ashram. The preparation of the many combined ashrams. You know, we have to think in a way that at this time, the second ray ashram is the most important. It does represent the soul of our planet, and it is the ray of the externalizing Christ, and it is the ray of the hierarchy considered as a whole. So what else is going on here, the work to be done in this ashram? The formulation of the techniques and disciplines which will be of service to the initiate or disciple who is making the primary effort to function objectively, to work before the screen of life and not behind the scenes. As hitherto, and to develop that resistant capacity which is needed to withstand the violent impacts of physical plane living. So the formulation of the disciplines which will be of service to the initiate or disciple who is making the primary effort to function objectively, and to work before the screen of life and not behind the scenes. So something has to preserve the working capacity of those who appear so they will not be overcome by the violence of the physical plane. A certain resistant capacity is needed. And I think, you know, DK has given us meditatively a number of methods of building into ourselves that resistant capacity. And number three, the mental and spiritual registration of the plans of the Christ and the consequent development of that skill in action which will permit these plans to materialize correctly. Now, Alice Bailey had for one of her keynotes skill in action. Detachment, rest, and skill in action, DRS. And a few other disciples too were given that particular quality to cultivate. So, this particular group is guarding the right mode of manifestation for the hierarchy and for the reappearing Christ. So these are the three that are functioning here. The three lines of activity for the work being done. So when we think of Master K.H.'s ashram, we can think in these terms. The general preparation of the many combined ashrams. So there's something very pervasive about this second ray, and it has an overall influence on our planet, and in fact, in our second ray solar system. And here are techniques and disciplines. Which the externalizing members of the ashram have to utilize to be most efficient as they come out before the screen of life. And then, finally, just to repeat, the registration, both mental and spiritual, of the plans of the Christ, and being attuned with those and being skillful, there will be an assistance in helping these plans materialize correctly. Okay. That the plans may correctly. Now, I wonder if those of us who've been working for some time at all this, if we feel that any of these particular types of work have characterized our approach. Certainly, we try to register the plans of the hierarchy. We cannot register them with accuracy and completeness, not yet. Master DK has also given us certain techniques, certain meditations, even protective formulas, as he gave to Roberto Saggioli, this sevenfold wheel of love, fiery love, and we too have had to develop on our own level a certain resistant capacity, because we are presenting to others ideas which are difficult to present and will often be rebuffed or mocked. We have to learn how to stand steady in the presentation of the work of preparation. All right. Within the second ray ashram of the Master KH and his affiliated groups, such as the ashram for which I am responsible, it is the energy of wisdom which is being effectively used. So Master DK calls his own ashram a subsidiary ashram of Master KH's. And we know or have gathered that Master DK's ashram is one of the externalizing ashrams. Basically, monthly, they were to meet in New York around the 14 rules for disciples and initiates, and Alice Bailey, as a member of KH's ashram and helping Master DK, was to instruct these applicants to ashramic life regarding the nature of the work of the ashram and the methods of the ashram. So in a way, even in New York City, interestingly, with its second-ray soul and third-ray personality, we have Master DK's ashram emerging towards manifestation. And he has, I think, a strong connection with the second and third rays. It might be said that this dual energy, hitherto fused and blended, is today working as a true duality. We're talking about the love wisdom energy. The energy of wisdom is active within all the ashrams, on all the rays, and under the masters. The energy of love is directed primarily towards the third great planetary center, humanity, stimulating the aura of that mass of living units, you know, the substance of the third group, humanity, human substance, so that their magnetic appeal will be the outstanding quality of their divine approach. The directing agents for this dual activity are the Master KH and a chosen group of his senior initiates and disciples, of whom I am not one because I have another task committed to me, you know, and therein lies an occult hint. We remember something about the reorganization of the hierarchical work, an internal matter for hierarchy in which Master DK said he would find himself involved. Anyway, a true duality, let's say that love and wisdom are working together now. So wisdom active in all the ashrams, on all rays, and under all masters, and the energy of love directed primarily towards humanity. And that tells us something about what we have to do as members of the new group of world servers, the sense of light, the sense of direction, as we might say the new group of world servers is an Ajna center in the chakric system of Sanat Kumara. And the energy of love, which is so definitely needed by humanity at this time and still to this day has not been demonstrated. So we have to learn magnetic appeal. And behind the induction of this magnetic appeal stands Master KH and certain of his initiates and disciples. But it is really interesting regarding Master DK, what is this other task assigned to him? And there is or has been some kind of reorganization going on within the ranks of hierarchy. It looks like Master DK has been involved in that. So Master KH and a chosen group of senior initiates. So they will be, maybe some of them are masters themselves, because DK says he's not one, and yet we know he is a master. So presumably a master could be involved in this kind of preparatory work to help magnetize humanity, to help induce a greater measure of magnetic appeal. The Master KH is therefore constantly in close association with the Christ, the head of the hierarchy. And just as the Master Jesus is in regard to the Christian Church, Christ is today with the aid of the Lord of the world and the Buddha, another triangle, preparing himself for the most difficult task with which he has ever been confronted. Of those difficulties, what can we know except that the Tibetan asks us to pause with regard to them and simply try to imagine what the Christ is facing in his task. Well, maybe a seventh degree initiate can function in that way. People like ourselves have enough to manage in our immediate environment and with regard to our small scale, relatively chosen projects. It is not a matter of the Christ issuing forth from the high place where he is today to be found and suddenly appearing among men. You know, let's say the seventh plane, the right hand of God, the council chamber at Shambhala. This is not the case. It is not the case of his taking infant form and growing into his work with advancing years. It is not the case of his being instantly recognized and acclaimed by millions of miserable human beings awaiting liberation. None of these ideas or hopes form any part of his plan, nor are they possible. No member of the hierarchy, and certainly not its supreme head, attempts to bring about results which are doomed to failure. So obviously he's suggesting that all of these particular modes relating to his reappearance would be doomed to failure. Presented thus, they would be bound to fail because the point of sensitivity of humanity makes failure inevitable if success is expected along these most ordinary lines. So this is the preparation of a debate between those who hold to an orthodox vision of the second coming and those who trained in occultism look for a different method altogether. Not sudden appearance, not being born in infant form. Why should he? He has his Maya Varupa, and not with regard to instant worldwide recognition. even among the Christian groups. As a matter of fact, they are likely to be the ones, the dogmatic ones, who reject an estimation of who he is that others may offer. So instead, skill in action, wise and understanding judgment, the adaptation of present affairs to the desired future, the coordination of the work to be done, and the clear enunciation of the platform upon which the new teaching must be founded, plus the survey, if I may so express it, of the foundations upon which the new structure of the coming civilization must be founded. It is with these things that the Christ is at this time concerned. Okay, nothing so childish and dramatic. We don't need a repeat of the creche, you know, the Christian scene of the birth of Christ, or really the birth of Jesus. We don't need that. Humanity has grown up somewhat, and we need something much more fitting, and that fitting to humanity's level of intelligence, and something that will, after all, have a chance of working. So, skill in action, wise and understanding judgment, the adaptation of present affairs to the desired future of the Aquarian Age, the coordination of the work to be done, the clear enunciation of the platform upon which the new teaching must be founded. That is something that we can offer in our groups. Certainly, a clarification over what is now offered dogmatically and believed in by millions who seek the short path of salvation rather than working out that salvation on their own. So you can realize, therefore, the tremendous and cooperative activity with which Master K.H. and his ashram are concerned. The stimulation of that activity comes from two directions, necessarily from Shambhala, from the Buddha, and from the avatar of synthesis, and increasingly from the world of men as expectancy, hope, and demand combine to make their united appeal. So, you know, every ashram itself has its sources of stimulation. And he's giving us some idea of where the stimulation of Master DK KH's ashram comes as they undertake a very difficult task. Right, well, that gives us an idea before going. Gives an idea work within Master KH's ashram. Now, this is one of the guiding ashrams intimately, maybe most intimately related to the actual definite physical reappearance of the Christ. Now he goes on and gives some idea of the preparation as it's found next in regard to Master Morya's ashram, in which, or by means of which he stimulates the selfless political workers, certainly not the selfish ones, the ones who can be expected to do something useful on behalf of humanity. The ashram or group center through which the Master Morya works is also exceedingly busy. So this suggests that Master KH's ashram is exceedingly busy. It is obvious to you that as this is a first-ray ashram, the energy coming from the avatar of synthesis will make its primary impact upon this ashram, which provides the line of least resistance for this energy of synthesis. There, it is scientifically stepped down or broken down prior to distribution to the ashrams of the five masters engaged in the work of preparation. So let's just say that DK has mentioned five specialized energies and five masters. Well, maybe in our circles, except on loan, as it were, there are not so many of these workers with whom we are immediately familiar. We know, I think there were eight or so. It's not a big number. First-ray souls in Master DK's group of students, and Foster Bailey was probably the most prominent one guiding, I think he was a lawyer, and he was guiding Alice Bailey in the right use and right and legal use of the second ray and what had to be accomplished through that second ray. I remember reading somewhere that it was very fortunate that he was guiding as he prevented her from making mistakes in the matter of the law, that not being well acquainted with those things, she might easily have made. All right, this is the Master Morya's ashram. And one of the five ashrams. And interestingly, the first ray of will and power goes to all of them, even though the avatar of synthesis may find it easiest to work with the factor of synthesis through an ashram like Master Morya's. Still, this first ray energy is distributed to all of these emerging ashrams, these ashrams most involved in the initial stage of the preparation. The highest aspect possible of assimilation by the hierarchy is directed by the masters towards the Christ and is used by him in his individual and planned preparatory work. Well, hierarchy is a lofty group, spiritually far ahead of humanity, but it too has its limitations. And it too has limitations on the types of energies which it can absorb. It certainly cannot absorb all shambolic energies. So the highest aspect of assimilation by the hierarchy is directed by the masters towards the Christ. And the Christ has to do his own preparatory work. Though he demonstrated when here before that his mission or work had a group or brotherhood objective, it is well known in hierarchical circles that the first ray synthesis is something higher still than unity, and that even the Christ has somewhat to grasp anent this new potency coming both from Shambhala or from the Father, as the Christ used to call the emanating source, and from extraplanetary sources. So this is looking at Christ as a center, really a great second ray center, but being stimulated by shambolic energy about which he still has something to learn. And beyond brotherhood and unity is a synthesis objective. So we'll just kind of put that in. Beyond brotherhood and unity is a synthesis objective, still higher. And the Christ, although, you know, the believer, the true believer, not often the most intelligent believer, will balk at the idea that the Christ has anything yet to assimilate from a higher center that is not known to exist in orthodoxy. Unless, of course, we talk about the Father's home and appealing to the Father, still there is no idea with regard to the planes and the rays of the nature of this center. So some of these ideas will at first be rejected. And as far as the extraplanetary sources go, they are probably planetary within the solar system. Above all, he, the Christ, has the difficult task of training or adapting his physical vehicle so that it can assimilate this extraordinary high potency and at the same time keep it in a condition in which he can move outward on the physical plane among men. The vibratory level has simultaneously to be stepped up and in a way stepped down so that the energy coming through and reaching human beings is not destructive in any unintended way. We have learned as we go along that there's something about the presence of members of the hierarchy which when that energy meets the unprepared human being, freezes that unprepared human being in place, and progress becomes impossible. There's kind of a rigidifying that occurs, and Master Hilarion points to the same idea with his image of the muddy foot upon the electric ladder. The energy of the ladder, maybe electric fire, will freeze fast the muddy foot to the particular rung that it has reached, and further ascent will not be possible. So much of what the hierarchy does is meant to protect human beings from the divine energy which hierarchy expresses. And that is not easily realized. It's they're working on our behalf when they seem to be working on their own behalf. You know, that old story of footprints in the sand, the disciple is walking with the Christ and there are two sets of footprints and suddenly there's only one. And the disciple rebukes the Christ for having abandoned him and going away. And it turns out that those are the Christ's footprints when he picked up the flagging disciple and carried him. So going on now, the Christian Church has laid so much emphasis on Christ's unique position as the one and only Son of God that great error has crept in and been fostered for centuries. Well, we've all had experience with that, and even though I personally was not born into that faith, as a choir director for many years, I managed to hear hundreds of sermons and to become familiar with the prevailing thought form in Methodist, Congregationalist, I'm forgetting all the different kinds of churches, maybe two Methodist churches over the time, over the period, either as a vocal soloist or a choir director. And I listened carefully to the preaching that was going on. So I feel like I passed through the age of Pisces in a musical way for a few decades. And it is true, the only Son of God is what is emphasized. It certainly doesn't take into consideration the vastness of the universe and the signs of intelligent life everywhere to be found. But okay, you know, it's what people are raised with and they adhere to it because of the fear instilled in them. Christ himself foresaw the possibility of this error and tried to offset it by pointing out that we are all the sons of God and greater things than I do shall you do. A statement which no commentators have ever understood or adequately explained. Well, we find, of course, the Christ foreseeing the problems, and we see, even in the case of the Tibetan, a great but lesser master, that he foresees problems which can arise in misinterpretation, and he attempts to forestall them by alerting us to misinterpretations that we may be inclined to make. The occult fact is that there is no being on earth from the very lowest form of life to the very, very highest who is not moving onward towards a greater and finer expression of divinity, and Christ himself is no exception to this universal evolutionary law. Now, you know, when you bring up this idea, antithetical, to the dogma, you either will be ignored or confronted. But you have to have the courage, of course, to, when appropriate, to speak what must be spoken and write what must be written. So he is therefore at this time, and because he is preparing to raise the entire human family nearer to God, laying himself open to certain powerful inflowing energies, his work, you know, absorbing into himself streams of spiritual force and undergoing a dynamic stimulation, which is entirely new to him. Will it be believed? It certainly does open up greater hope than the rather confined and confining picture we've been given in the Orthodoxy. This constitutes his testing for the exalted initiation which now confronts him, I would say the completion of the seventh initiation. It constitutes also the sacrifice he is making in order to complete his work on earth and bring a new salvation to humanity. Maybe humanity has been saved many times through the appearance of teachers bearing necessary information, a necessary reorientation, and this is a new type of salvation, so different from the childish, fearful heaven and hell syndrome. There may be some very unpleasant areas on the astral plane in which one would not seek to abide for very long, but there's certainly no eternal hellfire for failing to make an emotional decision. Yeah, it's amazing what people will believe and adhere to, and the fear factor is involved. Fear being the greatest of the dwellers on the threshold on our planet. I suppose we've had sufficient time to evolve that if fear were not present, we would not be in the still somewhat restricted condition we find ourselves to be in now. So it's good for people to come in contact, in understanding contact with their fears, many of which may be unsuspected, but they can be dredged up. Maybe that's the work of the depth psychologist, such as Freud and some others that really wanted to get into the basement of the psyche. But it all has to do with the view of what man is, what is his constitution. And certainly it seems that Freud and those who followed him did not see the constitution of man as the student of occultism sees it. That's why, you know, there are two necessities for progress: the knowledge of the constitution of the human being and the next step ahead. For any human being. Now, do you, do I know our next step? It would be a good thing to know, because then we can work in service with efficiency and not go off on sidetracks. But what a job the Christ has. He is preparing to raise the entire human family nearer to God. And then we have no idea what is involved with the laying of oneself open to extraplanetary energies. DK calls it a sacrifice. Well, we know it's always hard to withstand or to bear that to which we are unaccustomed, the new. Well, the Christ found this out, or had it reaffirmed for him, in the Garden of Gethsemane, where he had to put aside his own will in the matter of saving humanity or elevating humanity and accept the will of the Father, which presented to him something quite different than he had been anticipating. And so the famous pronouncement, "Not my will, Father, but thine be done." This is the acquiescence which every initiate, or even high initiate, has to voice, has to offer to the higher powers. In this case, Sanat Kumara. The Christ is working, therefore, in very close cooperation with the Master Moria. Now, I think, maybe we could take a look at... I'm not sure that we can do this so easily as I had hoped. But there is that, there it is. Okay, let's see if I can I can. And we do see these lines of connection. Here is the Christ, pretty much at the top of the second ray line. And there are three great lords: the Christ, the Manu, the Mahachohan. And there's definitely a line of connection. It's a blue line, prepared here by Keith Bailey in terms of the colors for the AUM group, and we're, glad that he's given us permission to use these amendments. Here's a blue line connecting the Christ to the Master Moria. Notice, not to the Master Jupiter, the regent of India, but yes, to the Manu, and yes, to the Mahachohan, and yes, to the second of the Buddhas of activity, it looks like. Certainly straight to Sanat Kumara and going through the second Buddha of activity, concealed, hinted at in these diagrams. now usefully colored in, is some very interesting information. If we know how to read it, we can see certain relationships between the masters that we may not have suspected before. So he's working in very close cooperation with the Master Moria and also with the Manu, and we just saw that, one of the three heads of the hierarchy. And these three, the Christ, the Manu, and the Master Moria, create a triangle of energies into which and through which the energy of the avatar of synthesis can pour, finding right direction under their combined efforts. Maybe that's something we didn't know. It's certainly something upon which I'm glad to be refreshed. Well, the Christ is the head of the hierarchy, the supreme head, and he got that way through his incredible power of love and sacrifice, especially in a secondary solar system and on a planet, the soul ray of which is the second ray. Now, probably in the coming solar system, and there will be, of course, an incarnation of the planet to our planetary logos, the Christ will not hold that kind of position. He journeys on to other destinations, so does the Buddha, and we can't really foretell what they will be, you know. Speculatively, it may be interesting, but we cannot know. We have enough to keep us busy, close at hand with the immediate possibilities of evolution, which are much more modest than speculations about that which lies on the cosmic astral, cosmic mental, cosmic Buddhic planes. Going on a little. On the physical plane, the initiates and disciples working in the ashram of Master Moria are primarily occupied with the expression of synthesis in the world of politics and of government, and with offsetting wrong approaches to synthesis, seeking to preserve freedom in unity. You know, they're are regimenting and totalitarian approaches to synthesis. They standardize and crush out the unique contribution of those who are to be seen as synthesized. Standardization is a big problem with Aquarius. And it could be that the color, the variety, the special gifts of the different units would be crushed out through a totalitarian imposition. So there is a right way to deal with synthesis and a way against which hierarchy sets itself. It is a subjective synthesis for which they work, a synthesis which will express itself in an outer differentiation. So I sometimes call this an articulated synthesis. There is the synthesis of being, which is essentially unarticulated, undifferentiated. But we are dealing with a somewhat earlier phase. I mean, the only center, area, state, which has truly undifferentiated synthesis, is absoluteness. Everything else is differentiated. This synthesis will define the many aspects of the essential, basic unity, which, working out under the stimulation of the energy of synthesis, will bring about eventual peace and understanding on Earth, a peace which will preserve individual and national cultures. Hence, all of the work done in the Destiny of the Nations to differentiate the countries in terms of their energies, but which will subordinate them to the good of the whole of humanity. So it is a synthesis in differentiation without compromising the articulation, the differentiation, the distinctions of the units involved in the synthesis. I mean, I think sometimes we glibly use the word synthesis without having a real feeling in our heart what it is. We do have to remember that the life aspect, so closely related to synthesis, is focused in the heart, first of all, and then in a whole series of heart centers found in every being. So, this synthesis in expression shows through outer apparent differentiation. Maybe the problem with some of the Vedantic approaches is that they ignore differentiation entirely. And, you know, I found myself doing that too in searching for the purest form of truth. But from a practical point of view, there is something called applied synthesis. And I'm remembering that in the Arcane School days, the very last lesson set, and it was a thick one, was called applied synthesis. I think it has gone out of use now, or even a long time ago, and was replaced, maybe, by Mary Bailey's Assembly of Bridge to the Future, which dealt with the rays and the initiations. So, the unity, we have to have the basic unity working under the energy of synthesis. And it will bring about peace and understanding on the earth. We have to realize that the first ray, in a hierarchical sense and a shambolic sense, is working exactly for that, as well as the other rays. The whole idea of destruction as associated with the third, with the first ray, is in a way a lower energy than the energy of synthesis. If we could only carry with us and perceive in synthesis, can we perceive in synthesis? This is a question. And without the heart activated, I think you can experiment with your energy system and you will see it to be true. There is no ability to live in synthesis. I mean, we do live in it, but to live in it and as it in a conscious manner. So that's one of the major objectives these days for students of occultism, to begin to grasp what is synthesis, because so often we get caught in differentiation, in which the factor of synthesis is not recognized. We need to express ourselves within a myopic field of differentiation. I use Maya as a general term there for the universe. But always, not just with the idea, but with the experience, as part of our experience of synthesis, we carry it in our hearts. And if we're not carrying it and are simply the victims of differentiation, then we have not gone as far as we can go. So I'll tell you what, we're just a little over an hour here. And we have reached, if I can just find it, page 664. Yeah, so I'll go back. I think it's 660 to 664. So 664. So this will be, one of those approximately an hour program. And today is the 19th of June. It is the what we call the Juneteenth, the ending of slavery in the United States, with its worldwide implications. Of course, there is the great battle. Slavery is still existent all over the world, hidden mostly, but in very virulent forms, some of which are simply financial. All right. So this is the end of program number 87, 1 hour and a few minutes. And we have gone from 660 to 664. And we have done this on an important day in the whole troubled area of race relations. And now we'll go ahead, or as soon as we can, to number 88. Maybe it'll be the 19th of June. And it will be 664 and onward. And we will deal with the work of the ashrams that are related to the five specialized forces. So far we've covered the ashram, very important and major ashrams, of Master K.H. and Master Moria. And we'll be dealing next with the ashram of an English master who is on the third ray and has involved himself with the labor movement. So, many blessings, lots of love to everybody. Must study hard and meditate deeply and, choose your means of service. There are so many possible, and may they be in alignment with the divine plan, whatever you choose to pursue. So we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.